since today's the first Sunday of the month, we've got all our kids staying in. Yeah, just the kids first, all right? So we got some handouts coming around, all the kids. If we have any left, adults, if you want one, you can have one. If you're a note taker, it might help today. All right, we're going to be reading James chapter 1, verses 12 through 18. And actually, verse 12 is going to be our memory verse for the month. So we'll read over that real quick, like, and then we'll get into our message, all right? So James 1, 12. Is everybody ready? All right. We'll give Jahari in just a minute, okay, before we go over it. All right. So all the kids have a outline? You got outline? Oh, in the back. Need one in the back. All right. All right, here we go. James, let's start it. Let's everybody. All right, here we go. We're going to start reading over our memory verse. All right, is everybody ready? All right, here we go. James 1, 12. Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial. For when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him. James 1, 12. All right. That's where we're going to start reading this morning as we continue our look through the book of James. But before we read our verses, I want us to re-jog our memories just for a second over what we've talked about up to this point. In verses 2 through 4, we saw that James' main point is that we should rejoice in opportunities toward growth, right? That certain opportunities, certain situations will occur in our life, and they are meant to bring us closer to God as God chips away all the little things in our life that don't look like Jesus, all right? So opportunities to growth, and we should rejoice in those, even though they may be difficult, even though they may be hard. In verses 5 through 8, we saw that whenever we have those opportunities for growth, and sometimes, let's be honest, we don't hit a home run every time, right? Sometimes we strike out miserably, looking at the third strike. You know, it's backwards K. For those of you who are baseball people, you never watch third strike. Anyway, it's awful. I've done it many a times. But in those moments where we don't respond correctly, and we figure out we're lacking in some area, James says, when I lack, ask in faith. Right? When I lack, ask in faith. So whenever those moments occur in our life, whenever those opportunities come and we don't pass, so to speak, we can always go to God and ask Him to help us do better the next time. Last week we saw that material possessions don't equal eternal position. So that no matter where we're at in life, rich, poor, or in the middle, that doesn't matter in the realm of eternity. Today, James is going to take us back. All right, so we're going back to this idea of opportunities toward growth. So James has presented us with three ideas in what I call, as I was outlining the book, introduction number one. These next couple Sundays are going to be the introduction number two. And it's kind of like, for those of you who have had kids or who have been teachers in any way, shape, or form, you say one thing, and then you realize they may not have got it, so you say the same thing over again. Anybody ever done that? Right? So that's what James is doing. He wants to make sure all of us get the point that he's trying to make. So today he's going to take us back to this opportunity toward growth, although slightly different context. Here we go. Let's begin reading. Verse number 12. Blessed is man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him. Verse 13. Let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempts no one. But each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own sin, or by his own desire. Then desire, when it has conceived, gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my brothers. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. Of his own will, he brought us forth by the word of truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. So today, James is taking us back to that situation, back to that opportunity toward growth. But he's doing it from a different standpoint. And here's what I mean. So in verses 2 through 4, James answered the question of how should I respond after the opportunity has come, right? And the answer is, or how should I feel, probably the better way is, how should I feel after the opportunity has come? And James says, for those who follow Christ, the feeling should be one of rejoice because God has granted us the opportunity to look more like Jesus. Now, that may be difficult and that may be hard and it may not be fun in the moment. But James says, as a follower of Christ, we should look back on that moment and rejoice. So that's kind of post-event. When verses 5 through 8, he answers a similar post-event question. What do I do when I realize I'm in the opportunity and I don't like what came out of me in the opportunity? How should I respond then? What should I do? And so both of those questions in verses 2 through 4 and 5 through 8 are post-event situations. Today are post-event responses. Today, James is going to look at in the event, in the opportunity for growth response. What should I do? Here's the question he's going to ask, and here's the question we're going to answer today. How should I respond? Listen to the phrasing here. How should I respond in an opportunity for growth? So when I'm in the middle of the situation, when I'm in the middle of the storm, when I'm in the middle of the valley, when life is chaotic and everything is going wrong, in that moment, how should I respond? And eventually we're going to see today, there's only two choices. There's only two. But before we get there, there are three things you need to know before we can answer that question correctly. Miss Kathy, can you put up, this is great. I love it when a plan comes together and you didn't even know a plan was going to come together, right? I love it. Miss Kathy, can you put the words to the third, not mansion over the hilltop, what was the God on the mountain? Can you put the line up that talks about tests and temptations? While she's getting that, here's what you need to know. Let me kind of give you some backstory. This plays in perfectly with what I want to talk about in this first thing you need to know. This is kind of pre the two main responses we can give, but you got to know this stuff to understand that. All right, so here's the first thing. I'm going to be honest with you. For years, I read this passage terribly. And here's why. Because when I read this passage, I did, listen to me very carefully, this is like Bible reading 101, okay? So this is like seminary level Bible reading info that I'm about to drop on you, okay? So listen, I did the cardinal no-no of when you read the Bible. And here's the one thing you must never do when you read the Bible. Is everybody ready to hear? It's really, it'll blow your mind. Ready? You must never take your ideas and your interpretation and what you think that means and import it into the text. Is everybody with me? You can't take what you think and make the Bible think that same thing. Okay? That is like the cardinal no-no of reading the Bible. What you must do and what I must do is every time we come to the text, we must let the text go out to us. I remember saying, like, we got to let the Bible say what it means, not what we say it means. When you do that, that's called heresy. And back in the olden days, now we're too modern for this today, but back in the olden days, that would get you like burned at the stake. Okay? So we don't want to be there, right? Can we all agree? That's not a good... So what we've got to do is we've got to let the Bible speak out to us, all right? There's some big theology words for that. Don't worry about them, right? But we can't ever take our meaning of what things mean and import it along the Bible. So here's the cardinal no-no that I did in this passage. I did that because somewhere along the way in my life, I picked up that trial and temptation were two completely different things. Now, I don't know where I picked this up. Nobody told me this. I just assumed this, right? And assumptions don't end in good places. Here's what I assumed. I assumed that each of these things, trials and temptations, were completely different setups. So I assumed that a trial was uniquely created so you would only pass it. Think about that. It was a unique situation that God orchestrated together, and you would only pass that. On the other side, I assumed that a temptation was something that obviously God, I read James, God doesn't tempt, that was uniquely orchestrated in your life that you were meant to fail. You didn't have to fail at it, but it was driving you toward failure, right? That's what I assumed about this, about trial and temptation. Because culturally, when you hear the word temptation, do you think of something good or something bad? Bad. When you hear the word trial, what do you think? Well, it's not good, but it's better than temptation, right? Can we assume that? So when I imported those meanings into this passage, I assumed that trial meant God uniquely created situations that we would only succeed at. And somebody or someone orchestrated these things over here that were intentionally meant to try to get me to fail, right? Here's the interesting thing about this passage. Now, those are our definitions. But when I got into seminary, something magically happened. I learned that the Bible didn't go down in English, right? That Paul didn't write in English. Amazing fact, right? He wrote in another language. And we've talked about that a little bit. He wrote in Greek. And so did the author, and so did James. And Greek is very specific, and it's a lot different than our language, and it's a lot richer and all that. Here's the amazing thing. Do you know what Greek word is for trial? Of course, no, this doesn't matter. Do you know what the Greek word is for temptation? Here's the amazing thing. It's the same word. It's the exact same word. It's the exact same word. And I was like, no, wait a minute. Time out, Lord. Like, this cannot be. Because remember, trials are supposed to be uniquely created so that I'll pass, and a temptation is supposed to be uniquely created to get me to fail. How in the world can James use the same word to describe both situations? Like, this makes zero sense. And then it hit me. Listen to me. Here's the thing you got to know. Here's number one thing you got to know about this passage. Listen to me right here. A trial and a temptation are the outflow of the same event. Let me say it another way. Let me say it this way. An opportunity toward growth is just an opportunity toward growth. How you handle that opportunity makes it a trial or a temptation. Listen to me again. An opportunity for growth is just that. It is an opportunity. They are not uniquely created for you to succeed or uniquely created to try to get you to fail. An opportunity is just an opportunity. What you do with it and what I do with it depends on whether we succeed or we fail. It's the ball is in our court. Somebody's not, it's not like, the teacher in school is giving you the take-home test. Like, I love to take-home test. And we didn't even have the internet back then. Because that means you got to use your notes and you got to use your what, of course, if you didn't take notes in class, that was kind of a big issue. You got to use your book, your notes, and all this. It's like, why don't you just go ahead and give me 100? Right? That's how I assumed the trial was. And the temptation was like the pop quiz that you really didn't know the answers to. And it was like, well, here we go. Just give me a Z. I'll take a 0. Right? But that's not what James is saying. James is saying that a trial and a temptation are the same event. How you handle that is what makes all the difference in the world. So kids, if you're taking notes, trials and temptations are similar, not different. They are similar, not different. Here's the second thing you need to know about this passage. Listen to me. God does not set you up to fail. Right? God does not set you up to fail. James says that pretty much verbatim in verses 13 through 14. When he talks about God does not tempt because he cannot be tempted with evil, and he tempts no one. In other words, God never sets you up to fail, and God never puts a situation in your life hoping you will fail. Because that is against his character and against his nature. God's not up in heaven going, oh man, I hope they blow this one because I'm really going to get them. Right? God's not up there going, boy, I hope you fail on this one. Oh man, that's not God. God wants you to win. He wants you to succeed. He wants you to do good. He wants you to make right decisions. Thank you. Right? right? He never sets you up to fail, right? Here's the third thing you need to know, which is kind of the other side of this. God gives good gifts. God gives good gifts, right? Kids, that's number three on your outline. God gives good gifts. He gives good gifts. What did James say? Every good gift and every perfect gift comes down from above, meaning it comes from God. God only gives good things in our life. So three things you got to know. One, trials and temptations are the same situation. How we handle that determines the outcome. Number two, God never sets you up to, or God doesn't set you up to fail, and God only gives good gifts. So what are the two responses that we can have? James says, when the opportunity comes, when the opportunity for growth hits our life, in that moment, how should we respond? And he gives us two options, and that's it, right? There's no third, there's no middle ground, there's no gray area. He says there's two options. Here's the first one. Remain steadfast. Number two, be lured and enticed by desires. Let's talk about that one to begin with. James says we can be lured and enticed by our desires. I love the imagery that James paints in this passage. The kids on their handout, or adults if you got one, they have a fish with a hook. And the fish has his mouth open going, and the hook's right there in front of his face. That's the picture that James is creating when he says, whenever that opportunity comes, and when we follow our desires, it literally hooks us in the mouth and drags us away. Like, I love fishing, y'all. It's one of my hobbies. I don't do it as much as I'd like to, but I love fishing. And the goal of fishing is for you to entice, to lure. In fact, that's what, for those of you who don't fish, that's what you call, it's not a fishing thing, it is a fishing lure. And they come in all variety of shapes and sizes depending on what you're trying to catch. But the goal is you're trying to fake the fish into thinking that what you're throwing in the water is food, and then when they bite it, you have a hook, and you hook them in the mouth, and the goal is to get them out of the water, on the beach, on the lake, or in your boat, so that you can either release that or take that sucker home, clean it, put some stuff on it, and put it in grease, and then have a fish dinner, right? Which is phenomenal, right? So I love a good fish dinner. So anyway, so the goal is to hook the fish in the mouth and to drag it from where it was to where you are. That's exactly what James says desire, evil, sinful desire does in our own life. It hooks us in the mouth and it drags us away. And James says when it drags us away and when we allow desire to remain in our life, bad desire to remain in our life, he said it literally births sin in our life. Just like a mother births a child, so desire births sin in our life. And James goes one step further. He says, and that sin, when it is birthed and it grows and matures in our life, it only brings one end, and that is death. Physical death, spiritual death, separation from God. And so remember, James is writing to believers in this passage. And so what he's saying is, whenever you believers are drawn away and hooked in the mouth, you're drawn away to sin, and that sin leads to separation from God. He said that's one choice you have when in the moment of opportunity. But he said you have another choice too, and that's the choice we want to end on today, because that's the choice we all need to make. And that second choice is to remain steadfast. The word steadfast, or I want to give you that definition. The word steadfast means to continue in an activity despite resistance and opposition. To continue in an activity despite resistance and opposition. In other words, when the opportunity comes, no matter what it is or what it is like, we must continue going on and following Christ and serving Christ and living for Christ and doing what he would do and saying what he would say, no matter what the resistance is in our life. In other words, we must stay firmly planted and continue to do what God's called us to do in the space that God's called us to do it in. Paul's words in Ephesians 6, 11, 13, and 14 are supremely helpful and give us another angle into what James is meaning. Verse 11, Paul says, "Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. Therefore, take up," verse 13, "therefore take up the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, having done all, to stand firm." And then the beginning of verse number 14 simply says, "Stand therefore." In other words, whatever space God's called you into, right? Whatever arena you're in, wherever you work, wherever you go to school, wherever you're at, whatever hobbies you're involved in, whatever circle is around you, he's saying, remain steadfast no matter what growth opportunity might come your way. In other words, continue living for Christ. Do what Jesus would do in that moment, in that space, given that opportunity for growth. So now is usually the time that we would transition into the, what does this mean for us? But it's really kind of simple, right? It's really kind of simple, because what we've got to do tomorrow, or maybe this afternoon, because I don't know what your week's going to hold, and I don't know what it's going to look like, and I don't know what opportunities for growth are going to come your way. You may have had some this week that you kind of didn't, that's okay. That's last week. We can't go back and rehash last week. We just got to go forward, right? So we got to look to the present. When we learn from the past, but we look to the future, and we say, okay, how do I need to live this week? How does this message, how does what James says really work in my life? And it's really simple. It's the same thing we just said. It's remain steadfast, right? Let me tell you a story real quick that I think illustrates this point really good. It's an old story from a long time ago. In 1863, it's during the Civil War, the Union Army was in South Carolina, and they were near Charleston, and they were trying to capture Fort Wagner, which is right outside Charleston, because if they captured that fort, that would kind of unlock the entire Charleston harbor, and they could come in and kind of take control of that port city. Well, at the time, they were kind of maneuvering their people, and they sent the 54th Massachusetts Regiment to the front to attack up. Now, when I say fort, I mean, you know, fort, like hills and valleys, and the Confederates were entrenched and all this kind of stuff. So it was a massive undertaking for this group of soldiers. But the 54th Massachusetts attacked, and right as the battle kind of gets going good, their color bearer, which is the person in that day, which it makes zero sense to us, but it was a strategic thing for them back then, that's the guy who carries the flag. And that, as he went when the person in command would give orders, and everybody would know how to move and where to go and kind of rally around and all that. Well, he gets shot very soon, like right at the beginning of this major push. And the flag was about to drop to the ground, and a guy by the name of William Kearney picks the flag up, right? And they keep going forward, and he gets to the top of the parapet. Now, the parapet was like the top of the wall. So now put yourself in the situation. If you're at the top of the wall, guess who can see you? Everybody who's shooting at you, right? And the Confederates obviously knew that if you take out the color bearer, then kind of everything disintegrates from there, because nobody knows what to do and all that. Well, anyway, William Kearney plants the flag. Now, let me kind of give you a little bit of history. William Kearney was an ex-slave. He had run away right up before the Civil War started and made it all the way to Massachusetts. This event occurred in like July, in January. So was it 6 months? He enlisted to be in the army. Never fought in a day in his life. 6 months. Picks up the flag, standing on the parapet. Now listen, this is where the story gets wild. He gets shot four times. One, two, three, four. One report I read said he got shot in one arm, one leg, and then in another place, and a bullet grazed his head. Now, I don't know about y'all, but like, after, I've never been shot. I don't want to be shot, okay? But I'm going to assume that after one, I'm done. Like, I'm time out. Come get me. I'm done. I'm out of here. Listen to me. Dude never moved. In fact, he held the flag there and never let it touch the ground until the retreat order was given and everybody filtered back. And as he made it back to his fellow ex-slave, that was pretty much the whole 54th regiment, made it back. His one thing was, hey guys, and I'm going to paraphrase it because I don't remember his exact words. He said, hey guys, I never let her touch the ground. Think about that. Dude got shot 4 times. Now, he could have stood like right below the parapet and, you know, we'd have been like, oh, okay, whatever. But dude planted the thing on the top of it, got shot 4 times, never let the flag touch the ground. About 37 years later, he would be awarded the Medal of Honor for his actions at Fort Wagner. Here's the other part. And I'm going to ask you 2 key questions after this. In fact, he was wounded so badly that he never returned to frontline duty and got an honorable discharge because he couldn't fight anymore because his wounds were so bad. Went on to live a good life, was a postal carrier, worked for the state capital there in Massachusetts, all this kind of stuff. Let me ask you a question. Oh, by the way, when they retreated, let me tell you this because this is key for my question. When they retreated, they pretty much gave up the battle there against Fort Wagner for about 2 to 3 months until the Confederates kind of went out of the fort and then they took over the fort. So here's my question. Did William Kearny win the Civil War for the Union? No. Very good. Thank you, Jeff. Did he win the battle at Fort Wagner? No. What did he do, though? He did his job in his moment, and all he did was hold the flag in the place it was supposed to be held. Listen to me, friends. You don't have to win the war. You don't have to win the battle. In fact, they've already been won. All you have to do, all James is asking you to do, all I'm asking you to do, all the Lord's asking you to do, is in your spot, in your moment, when the opportunity for growth comes, just remain steadfast. Don't give up. Just stay put and live for Jesus. You don't have to win the war. You don't have to win the battle. All you got to do is remain steadfast, right? I don't know what's going to happen this week. I don't know what's going to go on. But I do know I've lived enough life to know that at some point in our life, we are going to have our moment of opportunity or our situation for growth. And we, in that moment, we've got to remain steadfast. So that's your challenge this week. Remain steadfast. Pray with me. Lord, thank you so much for this glorious day that you've given us. Thank you for all that you are doing in our hearts and lives. Thank you for who you are. Lord, thank you that you've called us by your grace to be your children, to be your people. Lord, so much that you sent Jesus to die on the cross, to be buried and to rise again, Lord, so that we might know you. And Lord, we might have confidence to live in this life. Lord, so we might have hope. We might have joy. We might have peace as we walk through life. Lord, I don't know where everybody's at today. I don't know what's going on. Lord, I don't know what situations we're all in. But Lord, I do know that each and every day, each and every week, Lord, we are presented with opportunities toward growth. And how we handle those is immensely important. And Lord, I pray that we would all handle them with grace and truth and, Lord, remaining steadfast as James has called us to do. Lord, this week may we remain steadfast in the opportunity for growth so that we may succeed and we may shine a great light in our circle toward the gospel of Jesus Christ. It's in your name we pray. Amen.